cowboy mount, and more. The event will feature a variety of arts and crafts, vendors, a sweet tea competition, and a chili cook-off, all in true Texan style. Second annual Boogie Blues and Brews in Walter Hall Park in League City, September 20th through the 22nd. For more information, visit boogiebluesandbrews.com. And this is KPFC Houston.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to this edition of Technology Bites.
Thanks for that. Oh, jeez. Can you imagine?
Even works here. That's awesome. It's just like here in San Antonio.
Do you have dogs here, too?
If my daughter had called me, then it would have barked. But,
if you're listening, call your dad.
Yeah, I can't believe I had turned it on because in the car coming over, last time I got here and I had calls I had missed because I had the phone ringer off. So I turned it on, and then, of course, you forget to turn it back off. So anyways, that's a wonderful professional. I've already hosed the show, so we can only get better from here.
Let's get back on track, shall we?
That's the news. Oh, no, wait.
Thanks for that, Peter.
I'm Dwight.
We are in the Missing Geek Formation. This is Technology Bites. I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I've already said I'm Dwight.
And
he's not Groovehouse.
He's not Groovehouse. He's not here. Groovehouse.
We're going to enjoy the Groovehouse silence tonight.
We're seriously
we don't have Groovehouse for the 80s. He's out at Depeche Mode. He's at Depeche Mode tonight. He's shooting Depeche Mode.
And
not
I'm kind
the,
of...
like, naval base way.
We shouldn't have, and that makes it premeditated to have put that out there.
And I'm kind of not here because I'm obsessed at the moment. So
I was going to be obsessed, but I couldn't.
Oh.
He's in a land of iOS 7. I know that, you know, some people, I guess, have done it over the air, did the update.
That's what I did, with both on my iPad and my iPhone.
There were too many articles that said what you should do before you update to iOS
7. Which I wrote one of those.
Did you follow your own instructions?
Some of them. I mean, I kind of wanted to do it over the air just because to see what was happening. And I was at work, and I was on a fast pipe, so I said, okay, screw it. and off it went.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people did that.
At your work?
Did the network
that's
suffer?
That's why you don't have it?
Can you say saturation?
At the Chronicle, everybody kept coming up to me and go, is it done yet? Can I see it? Is it done? And the people were, like, waiting, you know, because they knew that I was going to do it you know, I'd be right there first, and then they were all coming by my desk going, can you do, what's
for every time though that it works and goes through like this, I don't do it, and I do it at home when I can plug my phone into a computer and back it up before it does all that stuff.
Well,
there's always that one time when people get widely hosed by that.
I had no problem at all on the phone. On the iPad, it would try to start, and then I'd get a message saying just some error and, you know, close or settings. And I had to do that several times, and finally it was almost like an engine you were trying to turn over and get it. And I have a feeling it was just a matter of hosed servers. So once it got it, it went going.
See, I figured by now it would have died down. So although I did get home later from work than I expected, so I didn't get to my computer until 7 p.m. I'm like, oh, that's enough time. I can download and install it by between 7 and 8. But I went to do it, and then it said I need a new version of iTunes. And then I went into the App Store, and it didn't show me a new version of iTunes, but it did show me a security update. So I was like, oh, maybe I need to install the security update before it'll give me iTunes. So it took, you know, 15 minutes to download the security update because the servers are loaded, and then, you know, 10 minutes of rebooting. And I'm like, well, at least I can install iTunes before I go to the show. But it still didn't show me iTunes being available.
You have to shave the yak first, and then you're able to go and install iTunes. That's how that works.
Ouch. See, I've learned that's one of those things. It's if you're like paying attention to when the new OS updates and all that kind of stuff come out, and you're, you know, right on the edge with it, then it's like Christmas and time ticks by very slowly. I have learned to be in a place where I'll get it when I get it. I'm not that, you know, I guess my thing is I'm more excited about getting an operating system update if it comes on a new computer or a new phone or a new device than I am about getting it, you know. I'm more in the like, oh, hey, look, it's on there. Click, you know, it's available. Click and do it, as opposed to the like run into the, be in the big first crowd for whatever reason.
Yeah, if I had an iPhone 4, I'm not sure I would have been excited about doing the update. I might have waited a while. I'm on a 4S, so I'm not quite as nervous. I'm a little bit, but not quite. So, but it didn't happen, and maybe it'll happen tonight after the show, and maybe it won't.
So everybody's out there, keep wishing for Afflicted to get his operating system update.
Somebody needs to ring those Apple bells for me.
All right, well, to try and pull things back onto the road, the vital statistics, the website is www.geekradio.com. You can do IRC from there, or if you know how to do IRC with your own application, we're on cuckoo.com for the server. .net, sorry, cuckoo.net for the server, and the channel is #TechBytes. When you go to the Geek Radio website, you can listen to past episodes, and you can, you know, send us messages. You can see our Twitter feeds. You can see what our Twitter handles are and follow us. You can waste a whole lot of time. It's not Facebook level of time wasting, but if you're at work, you could, if you listen to like past podcasts and start going to classic episodes from years ago, you can waste a lot of hours, much as we have here in the studio.
Waste them again and again, as a matter of fact.
Waste it again for the second time.
So does Cuckoo,
darn you, Winsock.
Does Cuckoo.net work? Because I have Cuckoo.com.
It's .com, I thought.
Ooh,
it's freenode.net.
It's freenode.
But I'm on cuckoo.com.
Yeah, it's freenode.net, but cuckoo.com.
So Dwight.
Oh, well, never mind. I'll just go back to playing.
Coming from the man that never gets on IRC.
I thought I was. Yeah.
I think we need to vet our sources a little bit better here.
Listen to me.
And if you want to call during the show, which we definitely do take your calls, 713-526-5738 is the number. That's the magic number.
Don't call that to talk to Groovehouse.
Yeah, if you're trying to talk to Groovehouse, you need to go and stand at the edge of the Mitchell Pavilion and yell really, really loud. Hey, Groovehouse, you with the camera. Especially during the quiet moments of the songs, that would work real well.
They're going to be like, this guy keeps requesting some song called Groovehouse. I've never heard of it.
And suddenly they Depeche Mode changed their entire mode of music to be this thing called groove house music. All right. Anyways, I guess maybe next we should hit the button and play
some news.
Rock us with some Chemical Warfare, and then we'll info shot you.
Ooh, rock me, Peter Hughes. All right.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, so Tesla has, you know, shown, you know, remember when the electric car was impossible? And the electric car going more than 100 miles on a charge, all that was impossible. Going Los Angeles to New York was impossible. Well, they've started their next thing. Oh, and, you know, Elon Musk, you know, having a viable private space company was impossible. Well, this guy does not know the meaning of the word impossible. Apparently, the thing that Tesla is now getting into is they are hard at work on new technology that could lead to the release of an autonomous car within the next 3 years. You know, there's always the self-driving car is kind of like the jetpack and the flying car. You know, it's always 10 years away. But apparently Tesla, much like the electric car, they want this to happen. They recently posted a position on their careers page for an advanced driver assistance systems controls engineer. The person that receives that position will be responsible for developing vehicle-level decision-making and lateral and longitudinal control strategies for Tesla's effort to pioneer fully automated driving, unquote. One thing that's interesting, though, is the Model S, the Tesla Model S, their kind of flagship car, doesn't have as many of the driver assistance features that other luxury vehicles have, like adaptive cruise control and lane departure warnings. Those systems use cameras and radar systems to keep the car in its intended lane and within a safe distance from other cars in front of it. The technology is already being used by Acura, Infiniti, and Mercedes-Benz to give drivers special semi-autonomous driving modes. According to Tesla CEO Elon Musk, Tesla's goal is to produce a car that is capable of running on autopilot within the next 3 years. Their goal is ahead of other makers like automakers like Nissan, who expect to release theirs by 2020. So he's trying to steal a march on them. I do know on other kind of autonomous car stuff, Google is obviously hard at work on that stuff. They've done a lot of the base technology work for it. One of the things I read about on another article about autonomous cars was it sounds like Cadillac is working on something where the car would drive itself on freeways and in traffic so that your commute, when you're stuck in traffic on the commute, that the car would, I'm guessing the deal is, of course, on the freeway, it's not like it has to decide where to turn, and all it has to do is know to move forward when the car in front of it moves and stop before it hits it. So that supposedly was in the next year or two that you could get, that we're going to see more of these autonomous things creeping into cars before, you know, the full-on...
So did something just happen in the Texas legislature to where they can't sell Teslas in the state of Texas like a month ago or something?
In the last session, Tesla... Yeah, the basically... You know, I'll throw some editorial commentary. Basically, the auto dealers and the distributors in the state of Texas used their purchased influence with the legislature to prevent Tesla from... Texas has laws that... In the car system, the car companies can't own car dealerships in Texas. And Tesla, basically, their thing was that they're different. They're a different kind of company.
Sell direct,
and they wanted
same
to sell
price,
direct
same everything,
and,
yeah,
and all that. So now you can't buy a Tesla in Texas. You can buy one online and go get it. And you can't, but you can't, when you go to the mall or
so
you go
are they going
to
pull their, the gallery? I guess no, are they still going to have a storefront?
They
you
will,
just can't buy?
They will show you the car and talk to you about it and answer your questions, but they can't discuss price and selling it to you, and they can't take you for a test drive, or you can't take it for a test drive because they're not a dealer. But, yeah, so I don't know how that ends up working. There are still people in Texas who have Teslas. And obviously, they have to go through a little bit more.
Yeah, one of them came to the last Geek Gathering.
I think I, if I remember correctly, they can, like, ship the car to you.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. you can sort of mail order it, I guess.
Soon. That'll be cool with the autonomous cars. They'll just show up.
Oh, look. It's my car.
You'll be sitting out in front of your house waiting, and this empty car will pull up. So, yeah, that... it's unfortunate, but, you know, that I guess I'm used to the whole distributor-driven, you know, the one that I was surprised is the whole craft brewing thing where they can sell direct. That used to, the beer distributors and the distribution companies they didn't like that.
Yeah, it took a lot of work in a decade.
And they got it, but...
people arguably are probably more passionate about beer than electric cars at this point.
And there's a lot higher numbers. There's a lot more voters. Tesla's, I believe there are like 700 Texans who are on the list that they want to purchase a Tesla. So I don't think, unless they all happen to live in one state rep's district, and then that only changes one vote. So I'm thinking they're kind of dilute, but they worked hard on it. There was some kind of, I think that the governor had said he would sign it if it got to him, but that's kind of like as a parent, and I'm sure Dwight has experienced this one. That's kind of like when you tell them to ask that it's okay with you if it's okay with their mother, when you know there's no way they're going to get past that gatekeeper, and you don't have to take the heat for saying no. Anyway, I'll just give you bad news. While there's bad news on it, while you're now sad about not being able to get a Tesla at a dealership here, for the first year in nearly a decade, there will not be a new Pixar film in theaters. Boo, sad. The Good Dinosaur was originally scheduled to hit cinemas in May 2014, but on Wednesday... they announced that they're pushing the picture out to November 2015. So this is the problem with, digital movies. It's just like operating systems. To get it to ship, you have to go through so much. They're also delaying Finding Dory, which is the Finding Nemo sequel, from November 2015 to June 2016. So... I don't think they really say what the they don't say why. It's production issues is kind of like why is it a problem with the script, or is it a problem with rendering it or building it or what? But the Good Dinosaur sounds interesting. It's a film about a boy named Spot befriending Arlo, a 70-foot-tall apatosaurus. In August, Pixar pulled Bob Peterson, co-director on Up, off the project, and they've not replaced him. So I guess that's an issue. The thing is, before you think, oh, this first time, or, this never happens, Finding Nemo was delayed from November 2001 to May 2003. And then in 2008, there was a film that was supposed to come out in 2011 called The Bear and the Bow, which didn't come out in Christmas 2011. It came out as Brave and was another, half a year later. So it's kind of – and both of those films, by the way, won Oscars. So maybe delays in Pixar films are not such a horrible thing. But if you're a Pixar junkie, you're going to have to hold out a good while now.
It looks like they kicked the director off halfway through the film, too. They swapped out directors to The Good Dinosaur.
It was what, having creative differences with the renderer? I'm trying to figure out how that...
He wanted to go with XP. Bad decision.
He wouldn't update. So there's that. We mentioned iOS 7, and we will certainly be talking about it more after the news. I found one article that has the five great features in iOS 7 you'll want to try right away, which is sort of radio-friendly. And speaking of which, the first thing is iTunes Music is one thing that you might like. Some people like iTunes Radio. iTunes Music doesn't cost you anything to try. It's free with iOS. It's in the iOS 7 Music app. And you can choose a preset station or create your own based on artists or songs you like. And one of the things that's different that changed very recently, I saw an article about this, even though you could buy the Beatles music in the iTunes store, you couldn't hear it on iTunes radio, and then that changed right before this all came out. Let's see, they've improved Spotlight, the search, if you can find it, they say. Gone is the swipe left from the home screen action to search on your iOS device, which I will probably like because I have perpetually swiped
accidentally,
that
right,
when I didn't intend right. to. If you pull down from the top of the screen, you get the new notification center, so that's not where it is. If you pull the home screen itself down, then the search bar will appear at the top of the screen.
Yes, you have to kind of put your thumb in the middle of any of the home screens and pull down and just hope like you don't open an app as you try to do it.
The only thing they mention here that's sort of a bummer is it doesn't search the web. It'll search for any matches to what you type in apps, mail, contacts, music, calendar events, videos, and stuff like that, but it won't hit the web yet, but it is apparently good and fast. Application updating is supposed to be improved. In the App Store settings, you can now tell iOS to automatically update your apps as needed. So that's good instead of, because I perpetually, my phone, I look, you know, I finally like flip through and see the apps thing and it says, you know, 34 on it, which is how many updates you need. And it's just sort of depressing. They do have a history of what was updated, so you can know. It also says once an app is updated, a small blue dot will appear next to the app name on your home screen, so you know you've got the new version. So that's nice. And then one that Dwight showed me before the show that is nice, and in total disclosure, it certainly is a feature they lifted from Android. The control center. They have the new control center. You swipe up from the bottom of your display, which if you've got an Android device, if you swipe down from the top of your display,
that's completely different.
Right,
it's radically new.
You'll
they didn't
see
steal
kind
that.
Of the same thing. although Apple, here's where they make it different. It's got the flat iOS 7 cool control look.
And it actually controls more things than just.
Yeah, so let's say Android doesn't have the volume control. You can't play and pause, you know, stuff like that.
Right. So they did take it and push it farther. Another borrowed feature, this wasn't from Android, but from WebOS. Apparently, the multitasking interface is totally revamped and is much better. Each open app is a card, and you can see three at a time. The app cards show the app in its last state. They're not actively updating. You slide them around, you can see all your open apps. Tap one, and you'll jump right in. If you want to close one or two or three, you can do it by dragging the app cards up and off the screen, up to three at a time if you want. So you have kind of more granular control. I guess it's better than the hold until it starts vibrating and then hit the minus.
And that's like WebOS. WebOS, when you wanted to get rid of a card, you swiped it up off the screen.
So that's five features, but there are apparently 200. So if you've got an iOS
device... You're not
going to
list them all, Peter?
You've got a... The headline on this article was the five features you want to try right away, and I think that did cover it pretty well. And we can talk more about the other cool things you were showing us before we came on the air. Another Apple News. That's all. What's left is Apple News if you want to tune out because you're into Android or Windows or whatever. Apple did raise the over-the-air download cap in iOS to 100 megabytes. That was a problem. In iOS 5.1, they had raised the cap to 50 megabytes, which was back in 2012. And so what happened is there was a lot of, like, TV shows and movies that wouldn't fit under the cap. The thing is, even with that, if you want to watch, like, the latest episodes of Breaking Bad, you'll still have to be on Wi-Fi. Because it's too big, even just to get, I guess, what, there's one episode, or there's two episodes left of Breaking Bad.
Yes, two left.
So, you know, I'm sure you can find Wi-Fi twice in the next 2 weeks. And finally, you know, the phones aren't out yet, but obviously that's Friday. They'll be out. And apparently the 5S, the thought is that the supply might be constrained, and so you may want to be waiting in line if that's something that you're really, really hot for. There's a reason they didn't allow pre-orders, and apparently that's the reason that it's not going to be there's not going to be tons of them. And so the interesting part with that, and you wonder, will people be torqued off, is they go wait in line, and then you get to the front of the line, and they're like, yeah, then we sold out of the 5S's. Do you want a 5C or
plenty
not?
Of 5Cs?
But it's not like rolling down from like a 32 gig to a 16 gig with the with the earlier ones. It's not like you're taking a small concession. It's a fairly different phone.
Well, if you paid the same amount as if you planned to get a 16 gig 5S, at least you could get a 32 gig 5C. So there's kind of quantity and quality thing.
But the 5C is essentially the 5 with a plastic case.
Right.
That's what
so,
it is.
With a colorful case.
And a better front-facing camera.
And I don't think that people are going to be... I don't think people waiting in line are not going to be the ones who are there to get the C.
Right.
So, could be interesting on that one. So that phone stuff, one of the things that people have turned their minds to now that we know the specs on the 5S is... how does what we know about that influence what's going to happen with the iPad and the iPad mini, presumably to be announced in the next month or so? Supposedly, Apple will be expanding its use of Sapphire to home buttons for the iPad and iPad mini, say sources in the Taiwanese Sapphire industry. Sapphire is already used in the camera lenses and the home button Touch ID sensor for the iPhone 5S. So if that's going to go to the iPads, then the Touch ID technology may be kind of throughout their stuff.
Is that where the Sapphire mines are?
It's further suggested.
I thought that was on WoW.
That Apple could adopt Sapphire for the touchscreen on a 2014 iPhone, but that may be unlikely. The sources themselves note that Sapphire ingots are extremely expensive. The covers on the 5S are said to be about 5 times more expensive than ones using regular materials. Touch ID may be a logical addition to iPads, since iPads can sometimes substitute for full-blown computers. Fingerprint recognition would make them more secure and thus more practical. And like the 5S, both iPod models are kind of flagship devices. There's a rumor and a discussion of it that actually is better than... some analyst thought that maybe they'll put, butterfly wings on the next iPad mini because it'll make it lighter when you carry it.
Especially when they started talking about how you only see all these people speaking only Chinese redoing the same quests over and over to get these sapphire ingots.
Anyways, that's the news. And so should we take this call and then we'll...
let's take a call.
Thanks for that, Peter.
And then blather on if we don't get any other calls.
Jay almost wasn't going to come back from Ireland. He joined this band, but then he figured out that they weren't really making any money because they were just down the pub all the time. Anyway, so
I guess I'm the one doing this.
Are you the groove house? Who's the groove house tonight?
I'm the receive groove house, and he's the transmit groove house.
The transmit groove house.
All right. Well,
preparing to transmit.
I'll let you bring him on.
All right, Jelani, our first transmission of the night.
Hey.
You're on the air, guys. Relatively quickly.
Hey, how you doing?
Real good. What can we do for you tonight?
Yeah, I'm having a issue with a printer in my possession right now. It's a Lexmark C544DN. And what's happening with it is it has every time I print a page, it has like streaks of lines going down the middle of it.
It's a laser printer?
Yeah.
Have you run the cleaning routine for it?
I haven't done that.
That's the first thing you should do. The printer driver in the control panel will have a cleaning routine. Put some paper in there, run that, and that's the first thing you should try.
Okay. See, I haven't done that. I've basically I didn't think about the cleaning page. I mean, it's something so simple. I put a new maintenance kit in it, and took out the guts, put a new fuser in there, put a new imaging kit in it.
Is that when it started? When it started streaking?
No, it started before then. It started before streaking. I thought doing that would fix it.
It says low supplies is one thing they say to troubleshoot it.
Try resetting the toner cartridge, maybe?
They said it's possible the print head lens has become dirty and needs to be cleaned.
Yeah, so run the cleaning routine.
Okay, run it. Okay, run the cleaning routine. Okay, All right, I will do that. I will do that. I didn't think about that, but yeah, I'll do that. I'll run that and see how that works.
All right.
Well, thank you, guys. You guys, hey, I listen to you guys all the time, okay? And I listen in, and every time I listen to you guys, I get smarter and smarter.
Soon, someday you'll be so smart you won't have to listen to us anymore.
Well, thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling.
Well, thanks, Delaney.
And for anybody else who wants to get in on the fun, it's 713-526-5738 is the number, or 713-526-KPFT.
What model did he have? Or
C544D.
This is crazy. So there's a Lexmark, a T640, and a T640 end, where apparently if it's in the sunlight, if it's exposed to bright light, it'll actually leave streaks down the pages. Because the right side of the printer is apparently there's a hole in there for the exhaust fan, and if too much light gets inside this area, line of toner
it acts like its own laser.
Yeah, that's crazy. So you can't print the light.
Another thing, whatever you do, don't get it wet
or feed it after midnight.
Don't go to the light. So I put iOS 7 on this iPhone and my iPad, and I really am liking it. And one of the, you know, Siri was kind of a joke previously. I mean, you know, a lot of people sat around, and the drunker you got, the funnier Siri got. but Siri does some like really useful things. So for example, I can tell it to let's make sure the sound is on. So turn off Wi-Fi.
Okay, I turned off Wi-Fi.
And it does indeed turn off Wi-Fi. And if you say it again, turn off Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi is already off.
That's pretty good.
She kind of sounded snippy about it.
Turn Wi-Fi on.
Okay, I turned on Wi-Fi.
Where'd the guy's voice go?
The guy's voice is on the iPad. There's a male voice. You can switch it to male or female. The control center is something that I've been, in everything I've written about iOS up till now, I've said they need to have this feature in it, and I'm so glad it's there. It's been in Android for a while. It lets you turn off all kinds of things, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, lets you lock the lock the rotation, let you turn on Do Not Disturb. And there's another feature in here now that I also am glad about and people have wanted for a long time, and that is the ability to block callers and texters who are harassing you. Mm-hmm. So, for example, somebody started texting me sometime. They meant to text somebody else. I think it was a kid. And I said, you have the wrong person. And so they took that opportunity just to kind of like keep sending me texts and being a jerk. I just ignored them and they went away. But I'd be able to block that person.
See, I actually like to reply to those people and start seeing crazy stuff and seeing what they do. I've gotten in some very bizarre text conversations that way. they ended up calling me and stuff.
Yeah.
Years and years ago, our home phone number was only a couple of digits off here in Houston from Air France, and we would occasionally get calls, and I seriously thought about it. No, I'm sorry, your plane just left.
Hello, and welcome to Movie Phone.
So the design is a lot cleaner, I thought I would not like the design. I thought I would kind of be, but it's gotten to the point already, and this is just in a day, where when I see the non-adapted apps, it's kind of like jarring when I see an app on it that is the old design. In fact, what's interesting is everybody who's got an iPhone the last couple of days has seen a flood of app updates where developers have been updating their apps. Last night I had like 14 appear at one time. It was really amazing. So I like it. And if you have a 4S or later on the phone and an iPad 2 or later, I'd recommend updating it. If you have an iPhone 4, I've seen it on an iPhone 4, and it slows it down. And so I would not recommend it at this time on an iPhone 4. I think it's the iPhone 4 maybe should not have gotten it.
Do you think the 4S visually, the screen resolution can handle the...
The 4S is still a Retina display.
Okay.
And so is the 4. But it's just kind of the horsepower to do some of the animations that it's doing, I think. One of the very cool things is that it has a kind of a parallax effect where if you adjust the phone and you look at the home screen, look at the icons, you can kind of see the icons move. It appear to be the icons moving on top of the wallpaper.
They call it layers.
Layers. It's very cool and
a lot like, what is it, Donkey Kong World?
Yes. And so I kind of find myself like putting different wallpapers on and looking around at it and see, ooh, that looks cool.
Trying to see if you can look around the corner to see what's past the edge of the phone.
Yeah, it's pretty slick. And again, this is on iPhone 5. It also looks really good on an iPad. And I happen to have a picture I got from the Guardian Eyewitness app, which is a photo app that Guardian puts out a photo every day. And I screenshot them and use them as iPad backgrounds. And it's a very cool photo of New York and kind of through a blue lens. And it just looks, the color palette is just perfect for iOS 7. So I was very happy.
I wonder if you can increase that. The gap between the layers. I mean, I'm sure they probably don't want you to because they like to have control.
Yeah, if you jailbreak it, you probably could.
But yeah, I wonder if you could do that and make it really so you move it and it's just sliding the picture behind you till you feel motion sick.
Fortunately, they're probably too busy keeping up with all the other new features, because I would be the smart aleck who would make it where if you turned it too far that the background would fall like 6 inches farther back and at an angle like you dropped it.
Well, I'd be curious if anybody listening has installed it, doesn't like it, kind of upset with it, wants to know how you can tweak
something. I was trying to find it somewhere. I saw
an
article with
version.
The headline that was the best snarky tweets about iOS 7.
Oh, that's good.
So, because it seems like, Gizmodo had the 30 best tweets about iOS 7's shaky launch.
Yeah, because some people were having problems
downloading it early
on. The complaints
were people not having enough space on their phone.
Right. It takes 3.4 gig to install. So I had, on my iPad, I had to delete a bunch of apps.
Let's see. Some of them are not safe for radio.
I would assume most aren't.
Here's a good one. I never got what my wife went through being in labor for 30 hours with our twins until I started downloading iOS 7. I guess that was a little slow. It was a little slow. Part of it is that there were a ton of people who rushed to do it immediately, and the validation servers for downloading the updates got choked.
Right.
And so a lot of people, one person tweeted that their favorite feature of iOS 7, they tweeted the picture and it shows software update and it says software update unavailable. Software update is not available at this time. Try again later. So there's some snark. I just wonder, it seems like the thing that's just interesting with the announcement of the phones, because it wasn't like revolutionary and world shaking. It's not like when the iPad got announced and it just blew people away. But on the other hand, there was some grousing and some snark leading up, and then even right after, and the stock price dropped some and all that. But it seems like people don't stick with it. You know, before they wanted to bury Apple. So if there was anything that they could spin into a stumble, then they were just all over it. Oh, this is going to be a flop. Nobody's going to want it. There was some of that with the S-type phones, because it was this doesn't look any different. It's just a minor update. And playing that, and that seems to have gone away. And I notice a lot of the anti-Apple talk that had been kind of building up through August with them announcing the phones, I think just in time, kind of, it's tailed off. It's sort of disappeared. And part of it's drowned out just in the normal coverage of the features for iOS 7 and the launch and that stuff. But some of it just seems to be that they just don't have their hearts in slagging Apple like they did. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the iPad. I do think that this one, that especially the iPad Mini, Apple really stands on a brink. If they just do a modest refresh on it, and it's just, you know, kind of, if it's an S type up refresh on the iPad Mini, I think they could lose a lot of ground to the Android.
Well, one thing that's interesting is I had to clear off. I had 2.4 gig free, and so I had to clear off about a gig or so, so that I have what I needed. And I cleared off 3.6, so I had 3.6 free, and then I installed it, and I now have 4.6 gig available. So I gained a gig.
I'm guessing those flat the graphics setup has probably got much
smaller.
A lot less space.
Right. So now I just need to remember what I removed so I can put it back.
Now that you have the room back.
That's right.
That's funny.
Wouldn't it be like in the list of your app store of like all your previous...
Yes, but I have a huge number of things that I don't have on here.
Dwight owns everything.
He's supposed to review. You know, that part of it is kind of his job. He has to try this stuff. He can't blow it off. So I try to pick and choose. I don't have too many.
Can you just reread your old articles and just install everything he comes up to? Oh, I like that. All right, I like that too. Nope, didn't like that.
The best of Dwight Silverman. let's see, to call in, it's 713-526-5738, and we do have a caller on hold.
You want to do it?
Let's do it.
Hey, Bob. You're on the air with us?
Yeah.
What can we do
Here's
for you?
Here's my problem. I got an iPhone 4S and ESPN app, and I go to the Major League Baseball scores or something, and all of a sudden on a thing it says, this video is not authorized for playback on this device, so I can't see the video. And I thought the Apple was supposed to be the greatest. Why can't I see the video on that app?
The keyword there is authorized. There are videos that are apparently there are some videos that are not released for mobile users.
So even if you were on an Android device and tried to look at that, you would not be able to. It's the person who owns the rights to that video is making the decision, not Apple.
Okay, but why does Apple even show it then if they can't? I mean, why does the...
Because at some point, the rights holder may change their minds.
Oh, okay.
And it's just, I mean, to let you know that it's there, and you may want to go to a computer, a desktop or a notebook computer, and play it. Just, you know it's there.
Well, and actually, that's an app. So that's from ESPN, and ESPN is, that's kind of... Apple is the machine that's running on, or Android is the machine it's running on. ESPN is responsible for the app, for their app. I know it's kind of a seamless experience, but that belongs to whoever wrote the app. The issue of what they show and what they don't show you.
Oh, so if I went to a desktop PC or a desktop Mac, I could see it.
You should be able to.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
That's the usual thing, is that they say you can't see it because of mobile devices. I don't know if there's anything where they'd fall under the blackout rule where they would do it by...
Yeah, if it's MLB and, like, say you're in Houston and it's the Astros and maybe it's a game that hasn't sold out.
it's all different things, baseball, football. Whenever, a lot of times I do it, not every time, that thing will come up, so.
Yeah, it has to do with the rights holder, and they've decided they don't want that on mobile. It may be, a blackout rule may be involved. You just kind of don't know at the time, but that's very common. In fact, even on YouTube, I have run into videos on YouTube that do not allow you to watch.
That's a lot more common. Or even like if you're getting to a video through Facebook, it'll say, hey, it's not allowed playback through Facebook. You have to go to YouTube.com to play it. So it's, yeah, it's a lot of just DRM kind of stuff, it seems like.
Okay. Got time, like, to ask you another question?
Sure.
Okay. I got a new 4S 6 months or so ago, and I got down the Weather Channel app, you know?
Uh-huh.
And, okay, City Houston. Okay, it's got Jersey Village in there. Why? I'm not in Jersey Village. I'm in 1960 area. But I can't. How do I get that Jersey Village off? I tried. Am I going to have to drop the app? And
there's I've got Android, and maybe one of these the iPhone holders can chime in. But on mine, there is, if you go to settings on the weather, there you can either automatically detect where you are, and sometimes it'll go by where the tower is. It'll make a best guess depending on your IP address. Mm-hmm. Or you can go in and you can say, hey, I want to watch 77429 for Cypress, or 77002, or whatever you want to put in there.
Yeah, put in your zip code, and that'll usually narrow it down. It's also possible that the closest weather station to you is Jersey Village.
Oh, okay. Well,
this is on an iPhone?
Yeah.
All right.
4S.
All right, so there's a very good, it's not a very good app on a desktop PC, but on the iPhone it's quite good. WeatherBug, it's free.
Yeah, I got WeatherBug, but I was using the other one.
Right. One of the things, WeatherBug is really good at narrowing down and place and getting you to the closest weather station. So, for example, when I use the Weather Channel, I live in the Montrose area. Mm-hmm. When I use the Weather Channel, I get a weather station like over in the medical center, which is not that close to me. But when I use WeatherBug, it locates me close enough. I live probably about a quarter mile from a Channel 11 station, mm-hmm. and it picks up the Weather Channel, the weather information from over at Channel 11. And so it's much more precise about doing it. So you might want to take a look when you want to know exactly what's happening where you are of trying out WeatherBug.
Okay. I got another question. Sometimes it says Jersey Village sometimes. And other times it says 66074, my zip code. Now, why does it do one time? It's just a stronger signal.
And you're not moving. Do you have maybe your Wi-Fi on when it gives you one?
Don't
and maybe
have
the
Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi's turned off when it's not?
No, I don't have Wi-Fi. And I get the weather station in Tomball in Houston. But it just bugs me. I want to get Jersey Village off there, and I guess I can live with it.
Well, I loaded the Weather Channel app on my iPhone. I'm looking at it. And it actually looks a little different than the last time I used it, so they might have updated it recently. But it looks like you can have several things, but the first thing it lists is based on it trying to locate where you are, whether that's based on a Wi-Fi location or GPS data or whatever you're allowing the app to use. It's gonna put in the location that it thinks you're closest to. But if you click on the gear in the upper right corner, you can have other saved locations, so you can add
certain
cities.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Cities.
I've got others added. Yeah. Okay, so they're saying that, for me, Jersey Village is the closest place, they think.
That's evidently what it thinks.
The variation may be due to, like, which cell tower you're connected to. Depending on whichever one it's got a stronger connection to, that it then reports for as the zip code because it feels like you're too far away from Jersey Village to be part of it, or what.
Okay, well, I think 77064, it seems to give the same information as Tomball, and I think I'm closer to Tomball than I am to Jersey Village. That's... Anyway.
Yeah, I would think if you put Tomball in your list of locations, and then that it usually goes to the one that you last looked at, unless you tell it to do by your current location.
Oh, okay. Okay. That seems to be it. I enjoy your program. Mm-hmm. Listen to it about every week. I was afraid that you were going to be calling for money this week.
We're always afraid of that too.
Well, we're glad you called in, and that. But there's nothing, and there's nothing stopping you from calling in when we're asking for money.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot.
No problem.
Bye.
Bye. You know, this happened at the end of the show last week, and had it happened very much before, where that we're getting calls that are about using your tablet type device. You know, in this case, iPhones. That's sort of an interesting. I wanted to sort of note it as a moment for the history of the show. Is that suddenly now we're getting calls about people using
those
kinds of devices, and that's, you know, dwarfing some of the other. You know, I think I've said it before, and you can be prepared for, you know, hell to freeze over if you thought I was some kind of Apple, you know, total Apple fanboy or whatever. I think a big source of why we have fewer calls in a given night is because there's a whole lot of people who got off of Windows XP and went to Windows 7 and Windows 8, and it works. It doesn't break like it doesn't get spywared, and it doesn't break like XP did. And so there's less people. The computers are just working, and they don't
have 56K baud modems.
We're going to be the Maytag repairman of tech.
No, there seems to be enough new stuff to talk about. It's just, I think we're probably going to have to supply more. We may have to do more homework and like research.
Or it's just possible that
during the show,
it's just possible they're saying, you know, Jay's not there and those other guys don't know anything. So we're just going to wait till Jay comes back.
I'm thinking usually they want to play Stump the Bozos if they get the chance, if they can ask the question.
Yeah, stump us. You try.
I'm looking at the continuing to look at the Weather Channel app. So you can save locations, but there's also an option in the settings for home where you set your home. Mine wasn't set earlier, and I set it, and I can't tell that it did anything, so I really don't know why that's for. But there's also one for location services where you can set it on or off. So maybe if you turn off location services, it won't put the one based on location on the screen when you load it.
Right, right.
I can try that and see.
The thing I know is when I turned it on and looked, it gave me the weather, the place that, you know, gave me the weather for my at home, which is 200 miles away.
It'll do location service. If you turn location services off, then all it will do is what you've put in for saved locations. But if you turn location services on, then it adds the first one it pops up on the screen when you load it is, you know, the blue arrow location service, so it tries to figure out where you are and load the weather for that.
I wonder if you looked at one from your locations, though, and you don't basically relaunch, because you've just launched it for the first time. And so is that part of the, you know, is that part of why it's picking the local? Because, like I said, when I launched it, and I haven't launched it in a while, I fully expected it to tell me the local weather, but it looks like I have to press.
I don't know how often it tries to relocate you. Actually, if you hit the refresh button in the upper right or the top middle to the right, that'll probably reload the weather and might also try to reload your location.
No, it's staying with where I was.
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. 713-526-KPFT.
Everybody talks about the weather app, but nobody does anything about it.
Actually, just looked it up. Weatherbug. Weatherbug for Android looks pretty neat, but I still cannot get over the hang-up of when they used to be kind of malware-y, kind of spyware-y back in the days, and I can't bring myself to run it.
Reputation?
Yeah, just because I'm sure it's new management.
You can always remove it if it starts, you know, throwing up the ads.
It's just, I have a hard time letting go.
I was surprised by how the Weather Channel app looks very different on Android. Mm-hmm. On my Nexus, it actually looks better on the Android one.
There's a handful of apps that look a little better on Android. Those are rare, I think, but there are a handful of them.
There's some that, of course, when I got a Nexus 7, they're, you know, essentially my sort of top 10 iOS apps are pretty mainstream, so I got them and loaded them, and they're not really that different. I found there were not dramatic differences between like Flipboard and Evernote and Urban Spoon and all of those. So, you know, it didn't. Some of that stuff, obviously, they're trying to keep their app experience consistent across the platforms and not. They're not as influenced. I wonder if iOS 7, I guess it doesn't seem to be pushing it. It's not pushing it far away from Android. It actually seems to be pushing it kind of close.
Well, in terms of features, it's adding some. For example, the Control Center. To me, this looks a lot more like a Windows phone, because the fonts are similar, the flat layout. The one thing that is, I think it's a little bit more dynamic and still a little more visual than Windows Phone, a little more graphical, but it is definitely borrows from that philosophy of design.
It seems a lot more modern, because Windows really, they came up with that by sort of throwing out the old playbook and the old standards and doing something brand new, kind of optimal for the...
I think you meant check disk.
CHKDSK.
All right, well, we do have a caller.
Yeah, I don't know if we... I told him I'm not sure if we'd have time to get to him before.
It is late. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we've just got about 3 minutes.
We've got about...
Do you have a Barrett time tonight?
No, I do have some trivia, though.
We've got about a minute. We've got about a minute until I start playing the bed music. So we've got about...
So we have to fill that with something.
2.5 minutes until we have to actually depart.
Well, I wonder how many people...
But he heard your comments about how awesome Windows 7 and 8 are, and that's why he was calling in.
I will say this. I am enough of an Apple fanboy that I'm not going to spend a bunch of time defending particular features of Windows 7 and 8.
I'll do it. Groove has it in here, so I'll have to do it.
The evidence of the phone call volume is that people are not having the volume, the number and kind of problems that they used to.
The thing is, as I said to him, part of the problem with Windows 8 is that they kind of dropped you into the deep end and didn't give you any direction or help. And once you figure some things out, from what I've been told, it actually is a good operating system to use. It's just that it's so different from the previous ones, and they didn't give you any help.
From our point of view, all the people who would have lots of problems with their computers are still stuck trying to get it off the home screen. And so they don't even have issues yet because they haven't been able to go online or do anything that would cause harm to their computer, which would cause them...
I just recently loaded a Windows 8 virtual machine, and I'm not really enjoying it. I've had problems figuring out how to use it, and I've said I'm not going to go watch those videos that are recommended to everybody else, just because I want to see if I can figure it out, and it's not intuitive if it's not on a touch interface.
Update
it's annoying.
Update it to the Windows 8.1 preview.
But I don't want to cheat myself.
No, you're just getting ahead of the curve.
All right, well, we're winding down the first hour. We took some calls. We screwed up a few times.
And just generally screwed around.
Sort of normal deal, and yakked about technology and phones. And we will, after a short break, we will be back.
I'm going to play the Barrett Time intro anyway.
Cool. That's
we're
going
to have to do it, Barrett.
You can do it.
You've got 5 minutes. You better start pounding those keys. All right, well, so you are listening to Technology Bytes. I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And we'll be back after these messages.
Attention golfers, join us for the 5th annual Hot Air Open to benefit KPFT 90.1 FM on Monday, September 30th. Online registration for players and sponsors is open. Just visit kpft.org. This year, we're back at the beautiful Clear Creek Golf Course in Tom Bass Park in Houston. The event will include a 4-person scramble, lunch, contests including closest to the hole, Tiger Drive, and hole-in-one, with an awards reception following golf. If you've golfed with KPFT before, you know what a good time it is, and if you haven't, there's no time like this September 30th. Online registration for players and sponsors is open. Just visit kpft.org. This is KPFT Houston. Everyone, we're proud to invite you to the second annual Music for Mets, Sunday, September 22nd from 2 to 6 p.m. at Rockefeller Hall. It's an afternoon of music, plenty of pizza, and a whole lot of good-hearted craziness. Barrio Dogs, Corridor Rescue, and Forgotten Dogs of the Fifth Ward Project join forces once again to bring help for the up to 1.2 million abandoned dogs in Houston. This year's event will be a tribute to the life and music of Norma Centeno and her father, Roberto. Outlaw Dave MCs, with performances by Centeno Spirit, Ken Monshine and Brotherhood, Zydeco Dots, The Mitch Jacobs Band, David De La Garza, and more, including silent auctions and raffles. That's Sunday, September 22nd from 2 to 6 p.m. at Rockefeller Hall. Advance tickets online at musicformutzhouston.org. This is KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
Interrupt this skit to bring you
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
All right. No real Barrett time, but I do have a single piece of trivia. Can anyone tell me the name of the nonprofit private organization headquartered in the Playa Vista section of LA that was created 15 years ago today? Dwight, can you?
15 years ago?
Yeah, if anyone has confidence, you can get the answer. You just have to have confidence. Peter, can you?
No.
Skynet.
No, that'd be awesome, though. Can you?
The EFF?
Oh, no. Someone just has to say, I can. Show some false confidence.
Oh.
I can. I-C-A-N-N, who's responsible for the coordination of the global internet system of unique identifiers and, in particular, ensuring its stable and secure operation. So that work includes stuff like the coordination of the internet protocol address spaces, IPv4 and IPv6, eventually when everyone gets over there, and assignments of address blocks to regional internet registries for maintaining registries in the internet protocol identifiers, and for the management of top-level domain name space, like DNS root zones, which includes the operation of root name servers and defining TLDs. So
they're responsible for .wtf.
Yes,
all the
yes,
and
all that kind
of stuff. Hundreds of more.
And that's the interesting thing, not to get on a soapbox, but, you know, the U.S. kind of, you know, we had, well, I don't want to steal Al Gore's thunder, but, you know, we had a pretty big hand in creating a lot of the internet. But all the NSA stuff, everything that's been going on, you know, the last 2 or 3 months since Snowden released all the documents, like Brazil today is saying, hey, we want to divest of an American, of a U.S.-controlled internet. And a lot of companies like Facebook and Google and a lot of U.S.-based companies are having really hard times, you know, retaining international customers because everyone says, hey, if we go through Google, if we go through U.S. servers, we're giving up all of our data. So we're having these large companies, large countries kind of give us some backlash on all this stuff. So that's what I'm not happy about today.
Well, there was a lot of noise about networking hardware from China, and, oh, that would open up vulnerabilities. Yeah, there's a difference between the potential that maybe that company is doing something that's like,
oh, yeah, we are doing it.
And the NSA's idea of, if it comes through a wire that goes anywhere near U.S. territory, we're going to listen to it.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, because several years ago, there were a lot of congresspeople and news articles about, like, I forgot the Chinese company,
Huawei.
Everybody's like, oh my god, they're putting spy stuff in the, you know, inside the chips on their routers, and you know, the People's Liberation Army is getting all this data, you know, that all those hackers are getting all this data, and now those people look like fools, because maybe China was or wasn't doing that, maybe, but we do know for a fact that the U.S. was and is doing that with hardware
and lots of other
stuff.
A
lot of software, even to the fact where I saw some documents where the Google routers, they're load balancers that you go when you do search terms, and depending on what you're searching for, you will either go through straight to the Google backend, or you'll go through a little NSA trap that captures everything and then hit the same servers. I think the Houston Chronicle actually today broke some kind of a capture document that showed that out of all of the phone companies and out of all the carriers that actually, I guess they called them record-keeping companies like Google and everybody, not one single company ever questioned the legality of handing over all the records. So that was the thing. You had a lot of companies saying, well, we didn't want to. We didn't want to do it. They got the FISA stuff unsealed, and it turns out no one said anything about having any kind of a problem with handing over any kind of... And then again, it was metadata, but still everyone handed over everything.
Well, and from the Department of Irony on Snowden, apparently his job was moving sensitive documents from one system to a more secure system.
Sneakernet.
He moved them, all right. He moved them. He secured them for posterity, I believe.
Well, anyway, that's it for your last J. Lee Free Technology Bites, and that's that for Barrett, Peter, Dwight, Inflicted Time.
Yes, the studio seems so empty with two people not here.
But we're rocking.
But we're filling it up with love and technology and iPhones and other stuff.
I can't take my eyes off my iPhone.
You really can. You're like, you know, I like that. I like when people get giddy over tech again.
Well, no, it's not. It's like, it's everything is new, and I'm trying to see where all the settings are.
I can't tell what you're whispering to Siri, but I'm really wondering what she's saying back.
I can't do that. I can't do that.
I'm sorry. I'm afraid I can't do that.
I'm calling CPS, Dwight.
No, I won't play Halo with you.
Open the pod bay door, Siri.
I tried to do that, and it doesn't come back
with
anything.
It used to say something funny.
Yeah, it seems to be less funny, but let's try this. Open the pod bay doors, Siri.
How?
Siri is saying, how? How?
Okay, well, that's better than what I did. That's awesome. I tried that the other day, and it didn't give me anything cool.
All right, never mind. You still have your soul, Siri.
All right, well, why don't we take one caller while Afflicted...
All right, first up on the second half of the show is Larry.
Hey, Larry, you're on the air.
Hey, I've got that new little Lenovo, kind of like a mini machine with Windows 8 on it.
Is that the yoga or something like that? Is that the...
I don't remember that word being used, yoga, but it's kind of like a little thin machine. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like as wide as a regular desktop, like the Dells and all that stuff.
Right.
Is it a portable or is it a desktop?
No, it's a desktop. It's a desktop. It's just small.
Oh yeah. The yoga is a portable.
Okay.
So what's your question?
Okay. I'm trying to figure out how to keep Windows 8 stable. It's at home right now. I've logged on it about 15 times, and it just gets stuck on the log-on screen. I have redone refresh the operating system as much as that refresh is.
Right.
You know, I'd like a real refresh. It pretty much erases all your good stuff, and you got to reset everything.
Right.
But I've done all of that, and I just can't figure out how to keep it stable. It's always having problems. I have another machine that has Windows XP, and this is pretty much stable as a rock. I keep I check as a website as far as, you know, all the adware stuff and good virus protection and all that stuff, you know. But no matter what I do and how I try to keep Windows 8 stable, up and running, solid, it always has problems.
So how old is this machine?
This machine is maybe 6 months old, maybe.
So it's still in warranty?
Yeah, it should be. Yeah.
Have you contacted Lenovo?
I have not. I actually didn't think about that. I was blaming it all on Windows 8.
I would not necessarily do that, just because if you tried all these other things, and particularly resetting the, you know, refreshing the operating system, which essentially puts a factory image on it, there may be something wrong with the hardware. And so to rule that out, and since you're under warranty, the service, your technical support is going to be free. While you have it, you should contact them and rule that out.
I never really even thought about that. I like to blame everything on Microsoft.
It's certainly easy to do, but it may not be the correct path.
In this particular instance.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
This one instance out of a million, right?
Right. So have you run do you let Windows Update run so that it picks up the latest patches and fixes?
It updates. Every time I turn around, it's updating. And I'm beginning to get suspicious of that. It's updated about three times this week.
Well, and yes, and what Windows 8 does is Windows 8 has a slew of apps that come with it. Those update whenever there are new versions of that. You'll have the updates that come the second Tuesday of the month, which is the standard, is Patch Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
And so that happens regularly. And but it sounds like if it won't boot, if it has all kinds of issues, do you ever get blue screens?
No blue screens of death? No blue screen.
Okay. Contact Lenovo, talk to them, again, and do it while you're in warranty. If you wait too long and it goes out of warranty, then if you do need to talk to them, you'll have to, you would have to pay for it. So you want to get on the record with them that you're having an issue.
Right. You're right. Have you guys seen this new update what is it, 8.1 or something like that? Have you gotten a chance to look at that and assess anything about that?
I put 8.1 on two Windows 8 machines, and it is very much an improvement. What's out there right now is a consumer preview. It's an unfinished version. Although what's interesting is Microsoft is updating that as it goes. So, but on October 18th, the finished version will be released. And if I were you, I'd wait for that. But I really like it, and I think it makes a big difference in Windows 8.
Okay. Did they put the start button back in?
Kind of. There's a start button on the taskbar. It doesn't necessarily give you the menu, but you can right click on it and get a lot of things that were available from the start menu. If you click on it, it takes you to the tile page. But they've tweaked the tile page a bit, and they put a button at the bottom of that main start screen that takes you to a master list of all your apps right there.
Okay.
So it makes it much easier to navigate, I think.
Yeah. Well, there's a program called, I think, Classic Start or something like that you can just, put on there. And I got my start button back. So that's no problem. But I'm just wondering, did they think to put that back in there?
Yeah, they put it in there kind of.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's a good idea. I'll give Lenovo a call and see what they say. And maybe this one time I won't get a chance to blame them for everything.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Have a good night.
Alright.
Yeah, I feel with Microsoft kind of being on the ropes. I used to be one of the first ones to, wag the finger at Microsoft, but I kind of want them to stick around just because, it would be, I'd have a hole in my life if I couldn't hit on Microsoft every once in a while. So they need to stay strong enough to be out there to be an enemy.
Yeah, it's kind of like having a Star Wars movie without the Empire or the Death Star.
Yeah, because you're going to be the new evil Empire in Apple, I guess.
Your previous big enemy, BlackBerry, they're not doing so well.
I'm holding out for the Z30.
The Z30, yeah, just announced today. It's kind of like, whatever. Oh, yeah, we got iOS 7 and an iPhone coming out. What the hell? We'll just announce iOS 2.
Well, the other thing that I heard on the news today for them, though, was that they're laying off half of their employees.
Yeah, like I heard even like 60%, like only keeping 40% of staff.
Yeah, that's bad. 713-526-5738 is the number, and we have another caller.
All right, Syed, you're on air with us.
Hi, guys. Actually, I was going to ask the opinion of any or all of you about the Note phone, Note 2, rather. But it occurred to me I actually have a much more pressing concern. The computers I have at work, basically there's just one, it's just a regular computer that acts as a server, and the other ones are just workstations. And it often happens that there's two machines, apparently in particular, where we'll try to open up, a program that's off the server computer, and all of a sudden it says, cannot connect, whatever, edit path. So at this point, I've figured out, or rather, I've had help, and so I know how to get back to the path and to get it back networked, I guess, so it's conversing again with the server. But I don't understand why it keeps doing that. It'll happen like every other day. All of a sudden, we'll open it up and try to, you know, access that program that's on the server. All of a sudden, can't do it.
Is it like a mapped drive that's disappearing? Like when you, what does that path look like? Is it like a drive letter and then a long path, or is it like a slash server name?
It's a drive letter, and there's no, I open it up again, and I'm not seeing anything different. Maybe I'm I don't know what to look for, but.
Is this on a workstation? I'm sorry, or is it on like a laptop?
Yes.
So it's on a workstation that does not leave.
It's a regular kind of a desktop computer that's functioning as a workstation.
Okay, and
it
doesn't leave the office.
Shut off at night or anything like that.
Pardon?
Does it get shut off or disconnected regularly, or is it just sitting there running all the time?
Well, it's pretty much running all the time. I mean, the only thing we've done differently is sometimes, and maybe not even consistently, we've started shutting off the computers just in case there's power surges in our area. We've gone through some computers that way.
This could be a no-brainer, but did you check? Like, I assume you mapped the drive. If you right-click on it, did you, and you go to map the drive, did you check the little box that says reconnect at login? Reconnect drive at login?
I believe so.
Okay. Oh, that'd be the first thing I check.
If we're not logging out, I mean, if we're not shutting off the computer, it should still be connected, correct?
It should. Sometimes, you know, something could hiccup, the network could hiccup. Usually, you'll get a little bitty dialog window that'll pop up that says, like, Windows could not reconnect to network drive, and it'll give you the network drive rather than the application failing, rather. But I would check that first.
Okay. Now, could this be, I even had one of these computers looked at by, you know, some gentleman because it had been knocked over and it was just freaked out and couldn't start, blah, blah, had the hard drive replaced. So it's kind of almost like starting from zero. Whatever was on there is gone. And I'm just not figuring out why it's so seemingly unstable. I don't know whether it could have anything to do with the actual proprietary software we're trying to connect to on the server. But the other two computers in the office don't seem to have that problem. So I just wondered if you guys had any thoughts on that. Which you did. I mean, you told me I need to make sure I've got that checked off.
Yeah, what version of Windows, again, were you running on the desktop?
I think it's 7.
7, and do you know what version it is on the server or on the file?
It should be both. They're both Windows 7 Pro.
Yeah, I've been trying to look for if anybody was having a similar problem, but it's kind of hard to zero in on the search to get.
Okay. It's kind of hard to tell from this information whether it's something specific to the application or the server, or whether it's a more general network problem. Like if this is happening, is it possible for you, assuming that your network is hooked up to the internet, can you go to Google or to other websites or?
Yes. It's just connecting to, sometimes it just cannot connect to that server computer. So, and we are networked apparently through the internet, whatever the wiring is for the internet. So
flick this way, there are a lot of moving parts in this. So just to make sure, so to run the application, is it an application that's installed locally on the machine, or are you actually going and you're clicking like some kind of an executable link on the server?
Well, there is I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but, you know, there is a shortcut on the actual server. I'm sorry, the workstation. However, we did have to go and locally put that on the computer. Yeah, put it on the workstation as well, because apparently that needs to be done, and managed to do that. So it should be loaded onto the individual workstation, too.
So the program will launch. It just says, "Hey, I can't find this file."
Well, no, it won't even launch. It won't do anything.
It's just a shortcut.
What it is, it's like a database, you know. So we'll try to work. The other thing is, it's a very unusual, and I don't know what to think about it. Is that it keeps, every time we try to open it up, it'll keep saying someone is requesting.
Yeah. Okay.
The computer.
Okay.
You want to do that? And
this
I can't
is,
get rid of that.
Yeah. Okay. I think I may know what's going on. So this is just one possibility. It could be that you are, for whatever reason, running something that may be designed to run on like one workstation, and you guys are sharing it over a network. So sometimes, you know, you might run something in, for instance, one workstation may set like, you know, like a lock file, or may say like, "Hey, I'm using this program right now," And because the server is running, or because you've got that file locked up on the server, maybe other workstations can't necessarily connect to it. They could be kicking other workstations out of there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a lot like, okay. You know, if you've got like an office document open and then someone else goes in and tries to open up the same office document, it'll say like, hey, this user already has it open. Do you want to open up a copy? Do you want to alert the user? What do you want to do? It could be something like that. So I would just check the software program that you guys are using and make sure that it's network enabled. You can actually run it on a network like that.
Okay.
That might be one of the first things to do.
That's something I can definitely check into.
Because the other thing, too, is you could, even if it isn't, if, for instance, like if it's just a single program and it connects to another back-end database somewhere, what you can do is you could create multiple directories and run multiple instances of that program. So you could say, hey, this workstation, you connect to this directory and you put a copy of the program there. This workstation, you connect here. And it's kind of kludgy, but that's one way to get around it, running multiple instances of the same program. I would check that. I would just check to see if the drive mapping is falling out, you know, and the easiest way to do that is if you're mapping a drive to it, just click on my computer and you should see a map drive. You should see something that's not like an A or a C or a D drive, you know, something higher up in the alphabet. And then the next thing is just try it. Like actually do a test, open up the program on one computer, run over to the other program, click it, see what happens, shut it down on both, and then try it in the opposite direction and see if anything changes.
Right. Okay. I will definitely look into that. And I just wondered, because when I was trying to get rid of that permission, it keeps asking me for the permission to, before it wasn't, you just clicked on the shortcut and it would open up the program. Now every time we do it, it says, do you want, you know, to this computer to access this or whatever. Is that a common problem?
It could be a permissioning issue, too. That just sounds to me like there's contention over a shared resource is what it sounds like. So it could be permissions. You know, maybe on the administrator needs to go and, you know, change permissions to where anyone can run it or anyone can write to the directory. Maybe it's got, like, some temp files in the directory. Without knowing the application, it's kind of hard to say.
Okay.
But it's going to be one of the two things. My gut's is saying, hey, it's either a networking issue like Flicted says, and you don't really know where to look, or it's going to be something with the actual application itself. Like maybe it's not designed to run more than one instance on the network.
Okay, well, you guys have given me some places to start. Thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck.
All right, take care.
Well, I know part of why the phones are quiet tonight.
Is it
because yesterday Grand Theft Auto 5 arrived. They're busy jacking cars and beating up hookers, I believe.
We need to get like a streaming KPFT Technology Bytes that can actually play on the stolen car stereos in Grand Theft Auto. I think we're missing a marketing thing here.
So, anyway. Well, looks like we do have another call. We certainly have plenty of open phone lines. 713-526-5738 to call in with your computer issues or your phone issues or to ask about phones that are out or going to be out. All right. Well, should we take that one?
Yeah. Hey, Paul, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Yes, sir. I just got a computer a few days ago from a couple of friends. I bought a phone, and they don't remember the password for it. I was wondering, is there a way I can get around that? And then on the second note is, they said the last time they used it that it had Windows 7, but it was running slow. And if I can change it, can I change anything, and what should I change it to?
Well, I mean, if you want to reinstall an operating system, if you want to go out and buy a clean operating system that you've got, you know, that's legal and you've got licensing to, you could go get another copy of Windows 7, like a full release. You could put Linux on there.
Or do you think a newer one? Or
you could do 8, I suppose. Mm-hmm. What kind of computer is it?
It's a Gateway.
Do you have any idea how old it is?
I don't know that. I really don't. They said it had Windows 7. I don't know. Maybe it's not.
If it'll run Windows 7, it'll run Windows 8.
Okay.
You can also run Ubuntu.
Yeah, do you need to get any of the data off there that's already on there, or you just wipe it and go
clean? I don't know. They sold it to us, and they just said they don't remember the password, so I can't even get on it. So I don't know anything about it yet.
There's an application that Jay talks about, I forget the name of it, that will let you crack an NT password.
It's NT password, PASSWD.
Right.
That's out there.
There's a guy in Sweden, I think, or Finland. It's some Scandinavian country. You can download it, and basically you boot off of it. I think it's actually a Linux kernel.
Yeah, it boots up Linux.
It boots up a Linux kernel. It mounts the Windows partition and goes in and will either wipe it, because you can just put a blank one in, or you can type in a new password, and it should set it to that. But most people have luck just blanking it, and then once they get in, then resetting it inside of Windows.
If you do a Google search for crack Win 7 password, you know, since you have physical possession of this box and, and you bought it from somebody who presumably legally owned it, and so we don't teach people to do stuff that's illegal. But if you do that, then there's actually, you know, there are articles that have that tell you how to do it and where to get the software and give you some different options.
Do you have another machine that you can burn a CD on?
I've got a laptop. I mean,
if it's got a CDR, I mean, that's usually what you can do. You'll make a bootable CDR for most of these things. And actually,
Google crack Windows 7 password. You said.
Yeah, or just NT password. Just search for NT password.
Okay.
And you can reset. Okay. Password may also help. The thing you can do is, if you want to go just mess around, if you want to go download a bootable Linux distribution, like Ubuntu or something, you can pop that in. Usually it'll mount up the drives. You can click around and see what's on the drive before you make any decisions to, you know.
And would the Windows 7 have like a automatic Windows reset or no?
Like, you mean like a reset, like a factory reset?
No, Windows 7 does not do that. Windows 8 does.
Oh, okay. But you think Windows 8 would be better to put on it than Windows 7? If it is slow, if they say, I don't know. I mean, it ain't been on it yet.
Does Windows 8 run any faster than Windows 7, Dwight?
It uses less memory than Windows 7 does. It has a flat interface. It doesn't use 3D graphics on the interface, so it actually is a little peppier on an older machine.
Did they give you all the CDs and the DVDs, like the Restore DVD?
That's the thing. They didn't give us any DVDs.
I would say, just to be on the up and up and to be completely legal, just go pick up a copy of Windows 8 and you can just install it clean.
Where can I get that for kind of a reasonable price? I don't want to go to Fry's or something because they're expensive with that kind of stuff.
If you go to Fry's and ask for the OEM version of Windows 8, that'll be about $100.
Okay.
Which is about as cheap as you can get it, and it comes with no support from Microsoft. You just get the disk, but that's all you really need.
Okay, and just put it in, restart the computer?
Yep, just be sure you ask for the OEM System Builders edition of Windows 8.
And that comes with all the applications and things on the disk?
It comes with Windows 8 and its apps. It doesn't come with Office, it doesn't come with anything like that.
Okay.
Just for giggles, if you're one of the draws about Linux, and I hate to push Linux on someone I don't hate to push Linux on someone. almost everything's free. For instance, if you want, the equivalent of Office, Microsoft Office, which is $300 or $400, depending on, what everything you get put in there, you can go get LibreOffice for free. Anything you want that's out there for Windows, there's almost a version of it. You put a K in front of it, you can get K Word, you can get K whatever, you can get whatever you want for free. And the Linux, it's pretty easy to install these days. A lot of it, you just double-click, and it'll install everything. It'll update everything.
And it generally is pretty stable.
And it's real stable, too. It won't crash. It's free. So, all you've got to do is you've got to spend 50 cents for a CDR or a DVD-R. So maybe try a bootable distro just to see before you make it out to Fry's. If you've got some time tonight or tomorrow. And check out. Save yourself $100.
Oh, yeah. They know what. All right.
Yeah, and once you've got the box responding, then find out, how much RAM is in it and some of those things. So that because if it doesn't have very much RAM in it, that's going to be the usual culprit. That's going to be the first culprit for it being really slow.
Well, it looks like they've installed another hard drive in it.
Nice.
I don't know what could be the problem. I mean, they could all have heard of them talk about how bad it is and how slow it is, but it looks like a really good computer.
It may also have malware, Trojan stuff. They may have gotten garbage on it.
Yeah, that's why, especially if you don't know where that computer has been, it's like picking up something off the street, picking up an undershirt and some pants off the street and just putting them on, because you don't know what they've done. You don't know who's been in those pants, So that's why, I prefer a clean install, because otherwise it's what you've got is you've got the opportunity to turn a used car into kind of a new car, so you could either get someone else's problems or go and install something completely fresh, and then you've got more or less a brand new system.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Okay, so you said Windows 8 and OEM?
OEM System Builders Edition is cheaper.
OEM System Builders Edition, right.
Okay, and that's at Fry's?
Fry's, Micro Center, any place that carries computers has it.
Oh, okay then. All right then.
All right, good luck with the new box.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Yeah, that's a tough one. It's a tough one. When you get a computer from somebody else, it helps especially if you're going to have money change hands. it helps if that comes with discs and manuals, you know, the kind of basic things. Some of it's just to make sure that they're selling you something that they really have the right.
Well, it's just nice too when you get in a eventually you'll get in a pickle where something's not going to boot or you'll need some drivers, and it's so nice to have that stuff at hand. I mean, it does make a big difference. Or have a Windows key, you know, some kind of something that'll let you install things that you need to.
The stuff that just comes with it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So. All right. Well, we've got open lines.
We are call free.
723-526-5738 is the number to call, and you know, we got about a half an hour left. We've got plenty of time to take your calls and so, you know, about apparently, I guess just mentioning Windows 7 and Windows 8, like, brought people out.
Windows 8.
Wow, really?
713?
Windows 8.1 problems.
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
Handspring visor.
Newton.
Oh, those we can answer questions about. That wouldn't be a tough one, but.
John has a long mustache.
Well, what? Last week we had a, what, Windows X. We had an XT, an IBM XT.
That was, you guys had some cool. Yeah. I always choose the worst shows to miss because the show is really good. Every time I listen, it's really good when I'm not here. I apologize for tonight's show being slow.
713-526-5738. Speed our show up. 713-526.
Got Peter in the studio.
KPFT.
To be all friendly and nice with you, you know, I'm good cop. Since Jay's not here and he won't listen to this far into the show until a few weeks from now, and then it'll just be kind of funny and odd. Now, here's something I've been looking at reviews on the iPhone 5S, and this stuck out at me. They were talking about the whole Touch ID scanner on the iPhone 5S, you know, where it doesn't.
Did they say anything if you could use your tongue?
It technically works with toes.
What about tongues?
They didn't say tongues. They did say that it technically works with toes. Let's see. They said the scanner didn't work when their fingers were wet or only partially on the home button, although they didn't experience any problems with clammy fingers in humid conditions.
I've seen, like, in the ads that they made and stuff, like, people are holding the phones, so when they're doing it, like, their fingers are at an odd angle. So I'm thinking, like, when it scanned them, it was actually scanning the side of their thumb instead of the flat part.
The Associated Press review, I forget the guy, Nick Jezdanen, I think is his name, he said that he was able to put his kind of finger on any part of it and it would read it. He said if you eat a pizza and your fingers are greasy, it didn't work very well. He also said I had some naan bread, you know, the naan bread. And he said that caused it also to not read.
They like, do like not know their marketing. They're going to have to chest for Cheeto dust. They're going to have to chest for burrito dust. They're going to have to chest for all kinds of things.
On Gizmodo, they talked about what the setup process is for doing it. They said it took about a minute for the phone to learn their prints. Cannot memorize up to 5 different fingers or thumbs. We knew that.
I think you have to you have to put your thumb on it, like, or whichever finger, like 3, 4, 5 times or something before it, I guess, it feels like it's confidently scanned.
And that's pretty standard with most.
They said, let's see. First, you start by placing your finger on the home button several times. It usually took, for Gizmodo, it took them 6 or 7 repeats. And then once the phone has enough information, it asks you to put your finger on the button at different angles. This can be done by rolling your finger from one side to another or lifting it off and on and off a few times.
It's just like jail.
And then the nice part is so that it does the...
And then it asks you to open up an email and type NSA.gov and hit send.
I think that's automated. That happens behind the scenes.
But it does sound like the process that you do to do this opens up a lot of angles, mm-hmm. so that it's got a lot of views of the of your fingers.
I'm going to get on a privacy soapbox just because I want to increase the number of people that care about this from 7 to maybe like 8 or 9. But this is the problem I have with it, is that your biometric data, like, you know, what your irises look like, your fingerprints, things like that, they're unique. You can't really change them halfway through your life. You're kind of stuck with them. So I would just caution everyone to be careful what you do with those pieces of information and who you share it with, and make sure that, you know, it's for a good cause, maybe not convenience. even though they're storing the fingerprint supposedly in processor memory or
supposedly hashed local in the processor,
yeah,
not ever uploaded to any systems off the device.
Yeah, because we can trust, you know, I mean, the same thing, like the same thing that tells me that I know my email's secure and that my phone calls are secure, I know that those fingerprints are going
to
be
as long
secure.
As the router hasn't been hacked, nobody's going to be able to get that.
So that's all. That's my two cents.
They do say, just in some of the other interesting questions and more gruesome on the whole fingerprint thing, it only works, the sensor only picks up living tissue. So if they hack your thumb off to try and open the
phone, they have to get it on there quick.
It better be still warm.
Fresh.
Also, you have to enter, there's a passcode you set up to be kind of the ultimate fallback in case
you lose your thumb,
lose your fingers, all five fingers or whatever. Or forget whose fingers you used or which toe or whatever. Anyways,
I like that guy on Breaking Bad with the...
No,
not Breaking Bad, Sons of Anarchy. The guy on Sons of Anarchy.
But you have to enter the passcode if your device has been rebooted or if you haven't unlocked it in more than 48 hours. So if it's sitting around. So that's great. So you come back from vacation where you forgot your phone at home, and now you got to remember the passcode that you know, if you put a good one in, which the passcode, I'm guessing that's the four-digit kind of thing, which I was depressed because there was a thing about the most popular PIN number, four-digit PIN numbers.
Was yours on there?
And mine was in the top 20, and it's like, oh, geez, you know. And it's not, but the problem is, the reason it's in the top 20, it's a pattern thing. It doesn't have anything to do with the numbers that are involved. It's a pattern, and so people do that pattern and you know, to be quick and lazy, and so it ends up being in the top 20.
Was Z for Zero one of the top ones up there?
I'm not giving it away because I haven't changed it yet. So
that at DEF CON, they actually had some cradles where you could actually set the phone down in there. They took some, like, resistive, you know, like some iPad styluses or styluses that, you know, act like a finger. And then very quickly, they would run through all the different combinations of, you know, the unlock, either the patterns or the numbers. And then they would have a little camera, and it'd be able to tell when it unlocks. So you could break a phone within, you know, a day, a little bit under a day. They were doing, about two or three a second.
You now all they need to do is automate it with a robot that holds the stylus.
Oh, that's what they were doing. Yeah, that's what it was. Oh, no. No, that's what interns are for. No, that's what they would do. They would put it in a little cradle, and they would, you know, just go over the things to where, you know, you could, you know, again, someone's going to want to break into your phone. Someone's got to whatever.
Well,
but
if some dudes in Vegas can automate and do that process, the police, the NSA, mm-hmm. it's, you know, they have a lot more resources for something that would probably do it better and faster. Speaking of cool technology stuff, I know there were some lovely parting gifts, and you weren't here yet last week. So, does Dwight, do you have one of the?
Yes, I do. I do have one of the coasters. I believe.
A limited edition
stuff was given out.
3D printed.
You need to
Ars
come, even if your jaw is falling off, you need to be here.
I missed the Google Glass night. I missed this. Although I did in my I got some pain medication. I took it one night, and this is why I don't take pain medication. I woke up the next morning and I bought a 3D printer.
Oh, really?
Oh, cool. Yeah.
They said it took Lee Hutchison of Ars Technica said it took
15 minutes,
two
or
hours.
Oh, 2 hours.
Yes, to do that.
So it's kind of the perfect
wow.
geek tech, you know,
PLA,
because
yeah.
in 2 hours you couldn't possibly go and get a coaster.
This is pretty awesome.
No, but it is cool, though, and yeah, knowing that it's printed out, plus being able to look at it, and you can see the
you can almost
patterns
see through
it,
too.
It from,
is there any light coming through there, or is that just an
no,
optical
I
illusion?
I think it's the pattern of the little pieces. Oh, I guess.
I'm going to get a picture of that. That's cool.
Plus the 3D effect. It's cool when you look at it, because you can see where it, you know, laid down each piece. Someday there'll be 3D printers printing out food, and so then you'll print out your Cheetos in the shape of healthy food.
They've got some cake decorating 3D printers, and I saw somewhere like more or less like instead of like the plastic extruder to where you're printing plastic, some people have taken like pastry bags. So I saw some chef was actually printing out like with masa flour some kind of pastry and then frying those and serving that up. So you can print up, you know, this really cool intricate kind of lattice work and go. But that's going to be in those high end restaurants where they're doing like stuff with foam. and they're doing, you know, all the crazy stuff. But it's getting
cool
there,
material,
you know?
Material science, because, you know, it's like the cakes that have pictures on them, the photographs,
mm-hmm.
that's just they substituted dye that's safe for the
toner,
ink,
more or less,
the,
yeah.
You know, for the inkjet stuff, and then they basically inkjet the picture onto the cake.
So, see, you were saying that, you know, because people have these wonderful Windows 7 machines, and they don't have many problems with them. Now we've been getting all these Windows. Here's another Windows 7 call.
Yep. Oh, and we got a Droid call though. Yep. So we're getting some more handheld
That's
calls.
Right. All right,
Justin, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hey guys, I'm having just a little bit of issue with my Windows 7 computer. It posts up BIOS fine. It gets past all that, and as soon as the Windows logo gets through flashing or whatever, it will sit on a black screen for like 2 minutes before actually coming up to my desktop. And I have a really nice gaming machine, and I was wondering if you guys had any ideas what that could be.
Have you tried running it in booting it in safe mode?
Actually, no, I haven't.
Do you know how to do that?
Do
you know how to do that?
Yeah, you should. I just need to shut down my computer and I think push F12 for mine.
It's F8.
F8.
And what it will do is you get several choices for safe mode, and one of them will show you, I forget which one it is, but one of them will show you the drivers that it's loading. And it will stop on the driver, and you can see what's causing it to pause. It's usually some kind of hardware, it's running into a hardware issue it can't resolve, and if you see that black screen, then that's probably what's happening.
Really? My other question is, I'm trying to get into the IT field. I'm currently taking classes at HCC, and I'm looking for a full-time job. Do you guys have any, like, advice on getting your foot in the door?
I mean, I would say the biggest thing is just getting your foot in the door somewhere. I mean, that's the thing. It's a lot easier to get promoted up into a better technical position, I think, than it is just to, like, step directly into one.
Also, what's your background?
Yeah,
what are you looking to do? Or do you know?
Information technology. Like, I'm doing network administrator right now.
For Windows or for what?
Yeah, for Windows.
So you're, looking at, like, Windows system administration, system engineering, or like networking, like Cisco, like routers and stuff, or
yeah,
what?
I'm trying to get Cisco certified, and I'm trying to get the network administrator through HCC, which is giving me, it's the older one, the older server 2008, that's all they got, but I'm currently taking those classes, and I'll probably be transferring over to U of H and going doing their network engineer degree plan.
I would say to some degree, the skill level that you're already working towards and attaining, it might be more skill than would be valuable, would be a higher skill level than necessarily like some help desk stuff. Because a lot of times, what a lot of people do if they don't have a degree in IT is they start off a help desk. And as long as you're like willing to put up with being on the help desk and you learn a lot, a lot of times you can break out of the help desk because you get the attention of like field people or the network guys or whatever, and then they'll pull you off the help desk onto a more specialized team, and then you can build up through there.
That's what I've been applying for is those help desk positions.
It depends on you. It's also too, if you're looking to career hop, or you know, not necessarily career hop, I guess job hop a lot, like move around a lot, or if you just want to kind of, you know, if you want to be a lifer, I would even say, and it's a little bit controversial, but go get a job even if it's not in IT at the company you'd really like to work for, and then you can always try and get into IT that way. I mean, it's kind of lame, but a lot of times you don't want to go work for, you know, get this great IT position in a company that's going to be gone in 3 years, you know, whereas if you could, like, get in, like, maybe, like, being a janitor at IBM and then go over to, like, a tech position at IBM, that's a little bit different. I started at UPS loading boxes to get into application development over there, not knowing that was where I was going to go.
All right.
But, I mean, that got me in the door because they didn't hire, they don't, at that time, they weren't hiring people outside the company. You had to come up through the ranks. So, you know.
So did you have experience and background so that when that opportunity became available, you said, look at what I can do?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much.
You got me sorting boxes.
Yeah, that's what I had to do is I had to, you know, go in there. I got far enough along in my degree plan where I started interviewing around. And again, this was at a time where if you could spell computer, you could get a pretty decently paying job. Even if you had a couple spelling mistakes, it only took you down a little bit. But it was a little bit different. Yeah, so I came and I said, hey, you know, I'm here. I've got this background. This is what I'd like to do. And while it wasn't pure IT, they said, all right, you're going to go to industrial engineering and write applications for an intranet, whatever that is. So, you know, but like I said, you know, just getting that your foot in the door is probably more important than what you wind up doing. I would just say get aligned with a really strong, good company and then kind of go from there.
Also, like, okay. If you're going to HCC or whatever, see if you can talk to some of your professors or other people in your classes.
Yeah.
Because HCC is a place where a lot of people are taking classes that aren't college age. You know, a lot of people go there and take classes in the afternoon or evening that have jobs. If you can make contacts with those people, it's possible that they can actually help get you a job where they're working in an IT department or
that's
something.
The networking is the big kind of secret because almost all my friends now, it's like I went to school with a group of people and no one really goes and just interviews cold for jobs. Everyone's like, hey, I'm looking for this. Oh, I've heard this person is looking for this. And that's kind of how you get in because a lot of times, you know, even HR is kind of lazy. They'd rather have like a good recommendation, I think, sometimes than, you know, have to go do like a stack of 50 resumes cold. So
would you guys recommend getting a job at HostGator as opposed, like, because that's pretty much help desk and that's where most of my classmates are at?
What I've heard about HostGator is that they don't necessarily pay great and they don't necessarily treat you real well. However, if you don't have a lot of experience, it's certainly going to give you some experience. It's going to give you a lot of time to work with stuff, to gain knowledge, and to be able to jump from there. It's kind of like going through the help desk to move on to better things.
You're going to have to pay your dues,
where you show that you've done the work, and that can't hurt when they're comparing you to somebody who's only gone to school.
See, right now, I fix electronics. I repair arcade games, and I network them together. So,
dude, that's awesome. But it's a shame you can't make money doing that. Yeah,
I make decent money, but yeah, I don't know, man. I just really wish it was easier to just get your foot in the door or something.
Yeah, I mean, just the thing is to network, talk to as many people as you can, keep your ears open, you know, ask questions, and, you know, just get out there. You know, you're going to have to probably have a heads down, kind of not that awesome, not that sexy first IT job, and go ahead and get it over with. You know, that way when your degree comes together and everything's kicking, you'll have something on your resume, and it's not, how do I get my foot in the door? It's like, hey, where's my career going to go from here? So.
Yeah. Hey, really quick, I did get the advanced boot option to pop up on my computer. Do you guys remember what it is, or can I tell you what options I have?
Sure.
I got directory service restore mode, debugging mode, disable automatic restart on system failure, disable driver signature enforcement, prepare your computer, safe mode with networking, safe mode with command prompt, and start Windows normally.
Safe mode networking?
Do safe mode... safe mode with networking.
All right.
And you should start seeing a slew of...
drivers.
Yeah, as it loads, because the various components.
It stopped on Windows System 32 drivers, class, PNP system.
Plug and play.
I bet so it's home built?
Yeah, well, I have... I bought a... it's an Intel motherboard, and it has drivers for the USB 3.0. That might be what it is.
That could be. You might try to see if you can update the drivers or remove them and reinstall them.
Yeah.
And I think you can check with the admin tools event logs and see what errors are showing up. Sounds like you've narrowed it down a little bit, and we need to take a couple other callers.
Yeah, coming up to the last of the show. Good luck with the new career hop, though. That sounds
fun. Thanks, buddy. Yeah, guys, have a good one.
All right, good night. All right, coming up kind of into the speed round, we've got Jane.
Hey, Jane, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, guys. How are you?
Real good. What can we do for you tonight?
I have a problem with my phone that I've been experiencing for a while, and I'm not using that phone anymore for that reason. I took my phone to Russia. It's a phone from AT&T, and I used to use it with H2O Wireless, which is another carrier. And I think they're using the same base as AT&T, and that's why you're able to plug a SIM card into a phone, and it will work without unlocking the phone.
Right, it's a GSM phone.
Right. So, dummy me, I was in Russia, and I didn't have a phone, so I decided to try this one. And I plugged in a SIM card from Russian carrier, and
which Russian carrier?
It was MTS.
Okay.
And
I'm just curious because that's actually who I used when I was there.
Oh, okay. And I plugged it in, and the message came out. And I thought it was asking me for a SIM PIN code, which is a 4-digit PIN code usually that I had. So I kept putting it in there, and I kept doing it over and over again, and it wouldn't take it. So finally I stopped. And when I came back to U.S., I went on the Internet, and I researched, and I realized that it was actually asking a code to unlock the phone from AT&T.
Right.
So that's when I called AT&T, and I requested the code to unlock the phone. They did give me the code, and it wouldn't work. I called them again, and they said that that was the only code they had. So I went to a store that works with cell phones, and they told me it's going to take them a week to unlock the phone. It stayed there for a month. They couldn't unlock it, and they gave it back to me.
Wow, that's
and not only
odd.
That, I was able to use the phone with H2O Wireless before, but now it gives me the same message with the same SIM card that I used before, after I came from Russia. So I'm thinking that it's probably locked itself permanently to AT&T, which I heard that might happen. And my question is there anything I can do to unlock it? Is there any way?
Have you taken it into an AT&T store?
Yes, I did.
So you've been in there and you've actually, because they have some equipment there where they connect it and they may, I mean, they may be able to unlock it for you.
I wouldn't think there would be anything beyond like software locking at that level. Like, I mean, because AT&T might lock it when they build it out, to hand it out. But I wouldn't think there'd be anything below the OS to lock it like that. That AT&T wouldn't be able to unlock.
They did give me the code, though, and I called them twice, but that was the only code they gave me. And it didn't work. And the lady, the customer service, she was completely clueless of what else to do. And their last option was to call Motorola, because it's a Motorola MB860. And I did call Motorola, and they told me that I got to call AT&T again. And I didn't do that again.
Are you working with the same SIM that you originally had from AT&T?
I don't know. See, I got this phone from a friend, and I put an H2O wireless SIM card in there without unlocking it because it has the same GSM basis.
Right.
So it didn't work. It worked for a couple of years, and then I took my trip to Russia.
Right.
And then it wouldn't work anymore.
Have you tried putting the HT2O SIM in it and tried to unlock it with that SIM in it?
Yes, I did.
Well, I wonder if you couldn't get an AT&T SIM, if it needs an AT&T SIM in there, if you can't go. Can you just get an AT&T SIM without having an account? Can you just go buy a SIM card?
I don't think I can, but I know that the shop that I went to that does cell phone repairs, they tried it with AT&T SIM card, and it will work with AT&T SIM card. It won't ask that message. But I don't have AT&T. I have
But I'm wondering if you put the unlock code in when you have the AT&T SIM card in there. Although, did you take it to a shop off like Harwin, or did you take it to
I did take it to a shop off Harwin.
So, I know some of those guys. Here's what worries me. If they can't get into it after 30 days, I'm not too sure if I would know to do anything that they haven't done. Unless you just got a hold of someone that was incompetent and lazy and just didn't try. But I would assume that they went through most of the processes. They probably looked up the engineering codes and got the unlock code and didn't have any luck with that.
I'm pretty sure
so.
I think you guys did everything with my phone that they could possibly do.
I mean, the good news is there's, and Pete might even know a little bit more about this, there's been some rumblings from Obama that he's going to try and convince the FCC to force the carriers.
They filed a petition today
to say that, hey, carriers, you have to unlock phones. You cannot lock customers in. So there is some of it's gotten bad to the point where people in government are stepping into this. So it's, you know, that's where we're going to have to go through, I think, to get to the point where everyone can have open devices.
The funny thing is a lot of them have backed off on being more willing to unlock than they used to be. I mean, it used to be that you had to have some kind of proof that you were like leaving the country, you know, or your contract had to be over for people to unlock it. And it seems like they've gotten more reasonable about it.
But at the same time, I mean, what you had, you know, you just because you can do it doesn't mean that the customer service representative person that you happen to dial is going to have any clue what that is, because I'm sure it's new training. It's probably not in their scripts. It's probably, you know, like a one-off kind of solution.
You may want to try just an off suggestion is, have you tried resetting the phone to factory default? Just total wipe, restart. You
and
can
then
look
put
up
in the pen.
Stuff for it, and then... you know, go back to square one in case it's remembering something that it picked up in Russia. By going back to default, then you're essentially turning it back to like a brand new phone. Now you might need an AT&T SIM or the H2 SIM to try and use it or work with it after that. But and you'll lose everything that's on it, all your contacts and that kind of stuff, presumably.
But you could do a backup before you did it. That way you could do a restore.
Yeah, everything is backed up on Google. But I already did a reset to manufacturer settings that is on the menu of the phone. But I know there is another way to reset your phone when you kind of press several buttons.
There's that, and there's a hard reset, I think. And I want to say on the Atrixes and Motorola's, it was like you hold the power button and you press the up volume button. But if you Google for that with your model of phone and do hard reset or factory reset, it should tell you the key combination.
Yeah, I didn't try that. I'm going to go ahead and try that. Maybe that will work.
Although, I mean, also, if you've had the phone for a kind, I hate to throw away. You know, I like the international phones that you can just kind of take with you and you have to worry about them and you throw away phones. But, you know, you can get a replacement phone for like that probably off the web or even just straight from, you know, like a Best Buy or someplace for probably $30, $40, $50 maybe. Worst case.
Yeah.
Well, I already got another phone.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
I didn't really like
this one.
But thank you guys for help. It was very knowledgeable. I'm going to go ahead and try to do the hard reset.
Do that, and then worst case, just, you know, wait a few weeks and let the Obama stuff wash down and, you know, go say, hey, you have to do this now. This isn't Soviet Russia.
I'm pretty sure my phone will be ancient by the time they pass that.
Your phone may already be ancient. All right, thanks for the call tonight.
All right, thank you. Right, bye-bye.
In Russia, phone locks you.
Phone in Soviet Russia, SIM unlocks you. All right, do we have enough time to do another call?
What's your
Yes, Flicted says yes. So by length of hold, speed round. Kavan, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Wow, last person of the year. Okay, I'll jump
in. Talk fast.
Okay, for some of the reason, logging in sites, I got a Blockbuster account to rent movies. I know, everybody's going Xfinity and all that stuff. Or not Netflix. Netflix, sorry. Netflix, I don't do Netflix, I do Blockbuster. I guess I was loyal. And, you know, I chose Blockbuster. When I go to the Blockbuster site, it has the place where it says, enter your email address and password.
Mm-hmm.
So that pops up, and the cursor is showing on email address.
Mm-hmm.
But then the little line that blinks says, you know, go ahead and type your email address. I can type it easily. But before I even type it, I'll take my cursor, and I'll click on that empty box, and then this screen pops up. That is about 2/3 of my monitor. I can still see the Blockbuster site, 1/3 of it, but this pop-up comes up, and it's just like a simple, you know, white background with all this script, numbers, letters, you know, crisscrosses, I mean, you know, hyphens and all this, I mean, like code or something like that. Now,
What web browser?
Google Chrome.
Try it in a different browser.
That's exactly what he said at Blockbuster. Then he goes, try Firefox, and he said also try WaterFox. I've never heard of Waterfox.
try Firefox.
He meant Kevin Costner's Water World, and don't try that. Don't try that. That's bad.
Okay, don't try Waterfox.
Right, but try Firefox.
Try Firefox, it might show something different. He said try that first, and if that keeps happening, then there's a problem.
Yeah, and if you can't get it, email jlee@geekradio.com.
J at geekradio.com.
He'll be back tomorrow. You can always email j@geekradio.com for a welcome back home. I've got a problem question.
Okay, I was just curious. So no Waterfox.
All right, you got to go.
All right, bye.
Good night.
All right, well, we successfully got through two shows without Jay, and Jay successfully has gotten through his trip as far as the updates I've seen. They stopped driving around, and we are out of time, so you're going to be going to whatever program follows this on the station you're listening to, and we'll all be back next week. I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And this is Technology Bites.
Leak City announces the return of its own family-friendly music festival. The second annual Boogie Blues and Brews will take place September 20th, 21st, and 22nd and will bring together the best of blues, country, Zydeco, and more from all over the region to Walter Hall Park. This year's lineup includes Cody Canada and The Departed, Eric Gill's band, Hamilton Loomis, Brian Jack and the Zydeco Gamblers, Cowboy Mouth, and more. The event will feature a variety of arts and crafts, vendors, a sweet tea competition, and a chili cook-off, all in true Texan style. The second annual Boogie Blues and Brews in Walter Hall Park in League City, September 20th through the 22nd. For more information, visit boogiebluesandbrews.com. And this is KPFT Houston.
Do you or someone you know own a local dining establishment? KPFT has a pledge drive coming up. And each drive, restaurants in the area feed our phone volunteers who give of their time to help KPFT reach its goals. Donations of food by these establishments are tax deductible and help community radio in the process. We also thank your establishment on air. Call 713-526-4000 for more information on how Houston eateries can lend a helping hand to KPFT. Ideal locations will be